Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Fill My Eyes and Company with Poetry. I hope everyone had a wonderful week, and I hope you have an even better weekend to follow. Wow, thank God it's Friday. That's all I'm going to say. I feel like I'm suffering from jet lag, and I never even got on the jet. Go figure, go figure. Hey, Rex, how are you tonight?
All right, how about you?
Well, there's no sense complaining, you know. I'm tired as all get out, but I guess I'm shaking off something, so. I just keep shaking it off. Eventually, it'll go away. Hey, Pam, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good. It was a nice, quiet day. Didn't go outside or anything, but, you know, just nice. Stayed indoors. And, yeah, it was not too bad. Not too bad at all. I know that feeling, though, about being tired. Boy,
oh my God.
Maybe we just need to sleep through the rest of 2023. It's only got about a month left anyway.
Yeah, I kind of like that idea. I like that idea. We have to wake up around the 20th or the 18th or something like that, first day of Christmas week, and then we
for Christmas.
So we get,
yes.
So we
yes.
get a couple more, weeks to crash out.
And then after New Year's, fall back asleep. Oh, and
there
today is my baby boy's 17th birthday.
Oh, my God. That's hard to believe. God, that's hard
yeah.
to believe.
I know,
just,
right?
And yeah.
He was about 11 or 12 years old when we started these shows. Maybe 10. No, I think it was 11. It must have been 11 or 12.
No, he was young. I remember that much. That's amazing.
Yep.
Yeah, I look at my grandson and I say the same thing. He's like 13. I'm like, when did that happen? Yes, yes. Hey, Rex, how's your weather down there?
52 degrees right now.
Oh, man. Jerk. We've been hanging right around, somewhere in around freezing. You know, few degrees above, few degrees below, you know. So it's been pretty chilly here. Yes.
Well,
it has been here, too. Yeah.
I think 50 is going to be our low for tonight. Well, actually, it's 54 right now.
I like 54. It's like a heat wave to me right now. It's okay. I got up this morning, right? It's been a crazy week and everything else. I get up this morning and I hear this sound. I'm like, what is that sound? I'm like, I can't identify that. So I go to let the dog out and I step into my pantry. I want to find a puddle of water on the floor. And it's the hot water heater. So today's project, my son and his buddy put in a new hot water heater. Yeah, I was like, well, that's just ducky. So that was my today. You know, it's been really something all week. But what do you do, right? I don't know. I was like, okie dokie. But the water pressure is nice now, much better than it was. So I don't know what they did different, but it's beautiful. Yeah.
Sounds like they did something right.
Amen.
It's all that sludge that was sitting in the bottom of that old heater.
You know, that heater was only about 10 years old.
Oh,
it wasn't really
okay.
That old, I don't think, you know. But my son's friend is a plumber by trade. You know, it wasn't just one of those makeshift deals. So, you know, I don't know what they did, but maybe it's the kind of heater they bought. Who knows? And there's supposed to be some new thing that's by law it has to be, you know, come up to code with this other new part. So we got that new part. Maybe it was the new part that did it. Who knows? It was an interesting day, needless to say. Started out about 6:45 this morning with what is that sound? Yeah. You know.
Bang, bang, bang.
No, you know, it was really strange. It was like, it's almost like a hum. But whatever happened to the heater, it was losing water, but it wasn't emptying out completely. Which I guess is good, because if it emptied out completely, it could have been a big problem, I think, my understanding. So it maintained just enough. We didn't have any hot water, but, you know, we maintained enough that, you know, we didn't have any major issues. You know, because it is a gas heater, so, you know, you have the gas going in there, running that pilot. You know, we don't want to build up too much pressure without water. That would not be good. So anyway, that was my dilemma of the day, but it's okay. The guys fixed it. I was happy. I was appreciative. You know. Yeah. So anyway, let's see. So Pam, what's your weather? Cold? Wet? Rainy? Snow?
You know what? Surprisingly, for this time of year, we have very little snow. The past couple of days, it's been, you know, like right around in the 20s. But the day before yesterday, it got up to 41. So I went and I walked around town and, you know, did a little shopping and, you know, it was, you know, 41 is still cold, but it was a sunny 41.
Right.
And, you know, it's, I don't know. To me, like this time of year, if we get above 35, I'm like, I better take advantage of this and go outside.
Right. Well, you know, the nice thing is if it's like around 40 something and it's not windy and it's sunny out, that's usually a pretty decent day. It's when it's windy and it's going through you and it's like, oh God. Yeah. So I can understand that feeling. What were you going to say, Rex?
No, nothing. I'm listening.
I'm sorry, I thought you started to say something when I opened my big mouth. So I just want to make sure I didn't cut you off. Okay. So look, we got a nice board of poetry tonight. I didn't count. I don't know how many we have, but it looked like a nice little board.
17.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Can't do 25 every week, right?
Yeah.
I was shocked we got through as many as we did last week. I was really appreciative of that. It was nice. So, yeah, that's good. Very good. I know you keep track of those little things. See, that's why I said it. I knew you would have the answer. Absolutely. So, yeah. So, anyway, it's, I think it's going to be a good night. All kinds of good poetry and Let's see. Hi, Naomi. Are you calling in tonight? You know, I always have to ask, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's right. The more the merrier. That's the way I look at it. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. But the weather's been crazy. It's December 1st. Happy December, everybody. Wow, that's just so amazing to me. We're already in December. I swear to God, we did this, right? Didn't we just start the year, like, not that long ago? Doesn't feel like it was, like, 12 months ago or 11 months ago. But it sure as hell is December 1st. Either that or, well, maybe I slept through something. Maybe. That's possible, you know. But, yeah, just one of them things. What do you do? So, anywho's how, I guess we'll get this party started. And Rex, I'm going to put this poem up for you called Beside the Bay by Sandy G. Let me put that up for you real quick. And whenever you are ready.
Beside the Bay by Sandy G. Along the shoreline beside the bay, tinted rust by clouds of dust, miles of lemon seagrass lay. A waning moon salutes the sea, rain squalls swirl in misty skies along the shoreline beside the bay, where a salty wind ripples by, building waves and tossing spittle, miles of lemon seagrass lay. Tufts of grass dots sand-plated plateaus borne by gusts along the flats, along the shoreline beside the bay. Lightning strikes, flame and flicker, lick and linger, scorch and singe, where miles of lemongrass lay. Igniting fields and woodland dry, human hearts and similar tinder, along the shoreline beside the bay, where miles of lemon seagrass lay. End poem.
Nice. Nice read, Rex. Nice read. So, anyway, I guess you want me to start.
No, you might. I'm sorry.
It's all right. We're just messing with you. We don't know what night it is. That's all. Whatever night it is, you have different duties, I think. So it's all good. I thought this was a great poem by Sandy G. I really did. I love the villanelle. I like how he used that for this. And I thought it gave it a real, I think it fit well with the bay and the lemongrass and the shoreline and all that. I just thought it all played together well. Nicely done. I did like many of the stanzas, you know, where a salty wind whistles by, building waves and tossing spittle, miles of lemongrass sea lay, or seagrass lay, Chris. Now, see, I'm a little dyslexic tonight. I'm sorry. But I liked the ending lines on each one of those. I thought it was nicely done. And I think he really had great imagery with this as well. Yeah, had a good feel. Thank you, Sandy G. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Jean. And Pam, how about you?
I really like this. It's a beautifully written villanelle. See, Naomi should be here right now to comment on this poem because she loves poetry about the ocean and the sea. And she would be very enthusiastic right now. Just
yes,
saying, Naomi. Just saying.
She's here.
But no, I really like how he paints this picture with the use of the repetition as part of the villanelle and brings in the idea of the connection between nature and the human heart. And it's really one of those writers where he does paint with his words. I really like he says, where a salty wind whistles by, building waves and tossing spittle, miles of lemon seagrass lay. I thought building waves and tossing spittle was a great way to bring personification to the sea. And then igniting fields and woodlands dry, human hearts and similar tinder. And within those lines, it shows that connection between the nature, between the sea and the way it pulls at the human heart. Wonderful, right, and very well done.
Excellent. And Rex, just so you know, we do have Naomi with us. I picked her up while Pia was saying she should be here. There you go. Naomi, hi.
Hello. Hello, everybody. Hello, hello. Beside the bay, No, it's down by the dock, sitting on the dock of the bay.
Sitting on the dock of the bay. Watching the tides rolling away.
Love that song. Yeah, what a great write this was. And, you know, there's something just so fascinating in the name Lemon Seagrass, you know. I don't know. It's just that I don't, just the lemon in there. but I really like this, you know, this poem all the way through, especially the stanza there. That I think Phil already recited it, where a salty wind whistles by, building waves and tossing spittle, miles of lemon seagrass lay. I just can feel that, smell that salty wind. Oh boy, I miss the ocean. I miss it so much. Oh, going there in January though, but not fast enough. But yeah, what a wonderful write by Sandy G, for sure. Beautifully done to that picture.
Absolutely.
I got to go with these. There's life and death in this, because you hit that first stanza, the second line, tinted rust by clouds of dust, miles of lemon seagrass lay. So you got your introduction, it's a touch of beauty, but you don't understand the tinted rust by clouds of dust just yet. And then you get that steady progression of what's going on. The waning moon salutes the sea, rain swirling the skies along the shoreline beside the bay. And then a bit more, salty wind whistle, and then the tufts of grass dot sand plateaus. So you get a little bit more of the picture. And by the time you get to the four-line finish, you've got the last two stanzas itself. Lightning strikes, flame and flicker, lick and linger, scorch and singe, where miles of lemon seagrass lay. Igniting fields and woodland dry, human hearts and similar tinder, along the shoreline beside the bay, where miles of lemon seagrass lay. So you get the before and after picture, so to speak. It starts out as the beauty in nature surrounded, yet something kicks off a whirlwind and all that beauty is destroyed in the moment.
Mm-hmm. This is a great piece. Absolutely. Yeah. Okie doke. For my second poem for the evening, I hope I'm not going to talk like that all night. I have this piece here called A Box of Stardust by Robert. And I do have, it's called A Box of Stardust by Robert M. And I'm going to put up an audio for that. So here we go.
This is my recital of Box of Stardust. Staring deeply into the wet, frigid hollow, I gaze at the culmination of many past failings. Much of the gifts collected throughout life reside here. Many treasures that I had amassed are buried in this very spot, but no longer belong to me. The chest is closed tightly, but I fear the contents will be at the mercy of the rain even still. Helpless I watch as the storm causes the earth to cave in and seal my dreams away. For as long as I can remember, the box was all I ever wanted. It was the hope at the end of many sleepless nights, and the aspiration each morning that I would make it my own someday. And yet, here I am, merely feet away, and can do nothing but watch as it is consumed by the will of the earth. So now, I witness the desecration of every fleeting tear of hope and every spark of denial. Every wish upon a star, the sum of squelched aspirations and menial epiphanies reside in the ebon confine, mocking me, taunting me in eternal anguish. For this box of faded stardust took with it all of my wishes, and shattered any delusions of me ever knowing peace.
Great read, Robert. Thank you for that, Todd. Very much appreciated. All right, Pam, come on in.
Okie dokie. Well, this is just absolutely beautiful. An amazing read, as always, dark and haunting. I like how it speaks on the loss of hope, the search for peace and the loss for hope. I especially like, for as long as I can remember, the box was all I ever wanted. It was the hope at the end of many sleepless nights and the aspiration each morning that I would make it my own someday. And yet here I am merely feet away and can do nothing but watch as it consumed, but is consumed by the will of the earth. I mean, those lines, you know, to feel that kind of helplessness, to be just in reach of your last vessel of hope and can do nothing but watch its desecration. Yeah. Amazing dark right and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Naomi, how about you?
Yes. Yeah, I agree totally with Pam. You know, amazing dark right by Robert here. And, you know, you feel all the sadness come through and that yearning to finally find that peace, you know, but not reaching it. And, yeah, the lost hope for sure. You know, when he finishes with, for this box of faded stardust took with it all of my wishes and shattered any delusions of me ever knowing peace. So, wow, you know, taunting me in eternal anguish. Wow, that's a very profound, that's very heavy, and wow, yeah, very heavy piece, very dark piece, very poignant.
Thank you, Naomi. All right, Jean, what about you?
Okay, well, first, before I go, I'm going to say welcome to Thomas B. I'm glad you called in, Thomas. Did you hear Robert's piece?
Yeah, I was listening to the last two-thirds of it, and I reread it. An intense feeling of despair really brings it home, so you feel the feeling of anguish, the sense of loss, and the feeling of helplessness. Very intense. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. I thought this was a wonderful piece by Robert. You know, incredibly written, dark piece. You know, his AN says a lot. Written about a man who wished to find peace, so he ended up taking his own life in search of it. Now he is doomed to feel the negativity eternally while standing over his ashen remains. It was pretty incredible, incredibly written. But the last two stanzas are ones I was drawn to. So now I witness the desecration of every fleeting tear of hope and every spark of denial, every wish upon a star, the sum of squelched aspirations and menial epiphanies resides in the ebon confine, mocking me, taunting me in eternal anguish. For this box of faded stardust took with it all of my wishes and shattered any delusions of me ever knowing peace. I thought that was just a pretty profound ending there. The piece itself was just great all the way through. So thank you, Robert, as always, for sharing with us on a Friday. Appreciate it very much.
Nice. He does give an explanation as to the piece itself in the AN. Yes, if you read a little deeper within, he gives hints throughout. Stop that first line. Staring deeply into the wet, frigid hollow, I gaze at the culmination of many past failings. Many treasures that I had amassed are buried in this very spot, but no longer belong to me. He hits on that idea of disconnection, going so far on his journey to find that peace that he is fully disconnected himself, not only mentally, physically from the world itself, but from his own sense of being, of who he was. And that committal has left him in a realm between layers, so to speak. And after that, for this box of fate, Stardust took with it all of my wishes and shattered any delusions of me ever knowing peace. But now he's got room and entry instead of finding that peace on one side or the other, so to speak. Nicely done, Robert.
Absolutely. Great comments, everybody. Let me see now. I got that one. Yes. Okay. Naomi. I have to find that. I just saw your piece. Where did it go? There it is. It's hidden. Okay, I'm going to have you read your piece next, Naomi. Because it falls in line like that.
Okay.
And whenever you're ready.
I forgot to. Whoops. That's not it. I just put up a little link to my contest. Okay. Oh, that's the one I put up. Love lost. My heart aches of love lost. A phantom lingering in the night where our forgotten promises like shadows take flight as our wilted whispers echo in empty halls, once passionate, now silenced, as hearts fall. Our supper table, once alive with laughter, sits cold and still, the absence, a hollow space. Candlelight flickers on a waning flame, reflecting upon memories, love's fragile name. And another lonesome night echoes in the mist of hurt heart's yearnings and shrouded in a melancholy twist as ten verses to our once upon a time of happily ever after love song lingers, bringing tears, a mosaic of fractured dreams, our forgotten promises floating in cold air, lost in the void between now and the arms. End poem.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you very much. And Thomas, why don't we start with you, please?
Okay, I just am struck by the sense of loss. It's just this feeling that, you know, there are places, spaces in the heart that can never be filled again. Supper table, once alive with laughter, the absence, a hollow space. It's just one of the most striking images, and the whole thing just cries out about how once the made life worth living is gone, nothing seems to be able to fill that space. It's really striking, very, very striking.
Excellent.
Thank you, Tom.
Nice. Thank you, Tom. Jean, how about you?
Oh, Naomi, this is another beautifully written piece on love lost. Definitely. I thought it was just really well expressed all the way through and sad and painful, you know. And again, here I am at the end of the poem again. As penned verses to our once upon a time of happily ever after, love song lingers, bringing tears, a mosaic of fractured dreams. Not promises floating in cold air, lost in the void between now empty arms. Wow, like just a phenomenal ending there. And I think you did a fine job expressing this. And a great take on that prompt, goodbye to love. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Fabulous job.
Great contest by Stelina.
Yeah.
Thank you, Pam. How about you?
Oh, this is beautiful. I mean, it's definitely an emotive right that pulls at the heartstrings. And congratulations on a well-deserved silver. You know, it's an amazing. It looks like a silver to me.
Yeah, silver.
Okay. But. Anyways, I really like this all the way through, but what really grabbed my attention was candlelight flickers on a waning flame reflecting upon memories, love's fragile name, and another lonesome night echoes in the mist of heart's yearnings enshrouded in a melancholy twist. You know, I like how that speaks on the idea of the candle reflecting the light of the heart going out, as all that is thought about is the loss and the misery of you know, love that is no longer there. And it's very poignant and just very well done, Naomi.
Thank you, Pam.
Thank you, everybody. Naomi, this is hits you with one of those notes of something that is very, very recent, because you're still talking in terms where you got to go with our supper table. Once alive with laughter, sits cold and still, the absence, a hollow space. So it's still very raw and upfront emotionally. And then you go another lonesome night echoes in the midst of heart's yearning, enshrouded in a melancholy twist. And then you roll right into the thought of displaying it where it's almost kind of a purge to yourself. As pen verses to our once upon a time of happily ever after love song lingers, bringing tears, a mosaic of fractured dreams, our forgotten promises floating in cold air, lost in the void between now empty arms. There's a desolation in the last end of that, a hard turn of events sitting right up front in the memories forefront, I guess. And nicely done.
Thank you. Thank you, Rex.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You, everybody.
Problem. Okay. Let me see now. Thomas, I'm going to put this next one up for you to read. This is by Frank, our one and only poetic Picasso / Francisco Del Mar / Frank, any way you want to name him, I guess. But if you wouldn't mind, here we go. Thanks, Frank.
Automaton of the Sages, a poem by Francisco Del Mar. I was created by those dauntless theoreticians in prior centuries. I am as primordial as the cosmogonies inside our memories, an amalgam of man's continuous odysseys of their chronology, in a compendium of the ethos, pathos, logos of human pathology, at a salient zenith of androcentrism and numerous apostrophe iconoclasts, agnostics of anthropocentrism within a catastrophe, facet and banal symbiosis and synergy of the lurid, hedonist, eclectic, and didactic plethora of the exegetist and the materialist. A specter of the paradox and the miscalculation of humanity, expostulated by the myriad of zealots and their exegetist morality. Amalgamated within the horrid anathema of the religious dogma, the castigated misanthropist torched in the center of the magma, toadmanary guardian of the ostensible zodiac and the cosmos, contemplated by the elaborate intellect, intricate men of kudos in the cryptic and authentic codes of mechanism and achievement, chastised by supercilious ingrates of philanthropic disagreement. I have survived.
eons of posteriori wars, ice ages, and calibites. A mutable evolution of an earth of anthropomorphic barbarites, apocryphal and apocalyptic apostolates of man's sedulous anarchy. From anthropods, humanoids, and now androids to fire. The world is infertile, polluted, and apophic, terra firma of despair, poisonous oceans and unsanitary rivers below a scintilla of the altar, vast metropolis and galactic villages destroyed and abandoned, all unmovable as mutants disbanded. A nefarious and tristful elation of corrupted and rapacious society, remonstrating the repression of imperialism, monarchy, and dynasty, sanctification of the oppressed republics and the illicit governments, auriferous coins and notes of the opulent remain an emerserent flag of the stars and stripes tattered in the dust of the mansion above the dilapidated and the disfigured statue of Abraham Lincoln. Besides the colossal columns and those memorable words of all ages under the enduring rotation of a wheel of the Autobahn of the sages. What remains of the inscription of the statue was subsequently in temple, people for whom he saved, memory of Abraham Lincoln is enshrined forever. The year 4068.
Great read, Thomas. Thank you very much.
And this is why I practiced beforehand to get all those words right. I hope I didn't mangle any of them too badly.
You did just fine, Thomas. Yeah, that there was a lot of $5 and $10 words you had to play with. So. So thank you very much. All right, Dean. We're going to start with you.
Well, gee whiz willikers. There's a lot in here to talk about. I think that, first of all, it was wonderfully penned by Frank and a great expression of his thoughts throughout. Philosophical thoughts. And, you know, his wording was really quite strong. Let's put it that way. A spectator of the paradox and the miscalculations of humanity, postulated by the myriad of zealots in their ambiguous morality, amalgamated within a horrid anathema of their religious dogma, the castigated misanthropists torched in the center of the magma. I mean, he just, like, you know, he didn't make it easy, but he really did express himself. And I think he did a great job with this. So what an excellent piece. And thank you, Frank, for this. Absolutely, you know, fabulous, right? Another one of those. This is from an anthology of his intellects I share, Labyrinth of the Immortals, Colosseum of the Demigods, Iblis, Insurrection of the Zealots. He's got a whole series of these as well. So, you know, hopefully he'll be sharing those as he did the other ones that he had written on. So it'll be nice to see. Great job, Frank, and thanks a million.
All right. Thank you, Jean. Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, well, I just felt like I'm coming out of a mix of the two movies, Terminator and The Planet of the Apes. here, you know, because, yeah, he does talk about, you know, the robots taking over and, you know, the computers and everything. But then you get to that last, you know, that last stanza, the flag of the stars and stripes tattered in the dust of the mansion above the dilapidated and disfigured statue of Abraham Lincoln beside the colossal columns, and those memorable words of all ages under the enduring rotation of a wheel of the automation of the sages. That makes me really think of, you know, the scenery of the Planet of the Apes when they discover that they're really on planet Earth. You know, they're not on another planet at all. They're on their own planet. But, so really, you know, made me travel within this rite. So amazing, well told this tale. And, you know, it's thought-provoking, too. You know, there's a lot of, words for thought in here. You know, where are we going? You know, because we're not going up. We're surely not going up, my gracious. So it makes you think of the reality of the world today and, you know, where are we headed for in the future? Anyway, that's what I got out of it. So thank you so much, Frank. Wonderful, right?
Excellent. Thank you, Naomi. Pam, how about you?
Well, I just don't know how I'm going to comment when Naomi stole my exact thoughts. I had thought the same thing, Naomi, that it reminded me of those two movies, Terminator and the end part of Planet of the Apes. So as soon as you said that exactly, I had to chuckle to myself. I was like, wow. But no, this really is a brilliant rite with intelligent use of language. You know, delving into not only science fiction, but I think in some ways is bordering on reality. You know, especially as a spectator of the paradox and the miscalculation of humanity, excusulated by the myriad of zealots in their just morality. You know, I like how he brings in the idea of how humanity starts to argue with each other about what is best for us. You know, how far can we take, you know, replacing humanity with machines? And the idea of, and I like that he does this in the voice of the machine, the robot, with the first person narrative. And then brings us to another part that really stood out to me besides the end was also the world is an infernal, polluted, and aphotic terra firma of despair. I've always enjoyed the word terra firma for the earth, you know, that phrase. I always thought that was beautiful. But, yeah, the fact that he speaks in this on the idea of trying to better ourselves and then coming to the realization that we didn't better ourselves because we went against the natural order of things. So amazing, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Thomas, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, it's a great use of language to try to capture the weight of history and time and the way in which we complicate everything, regardless of what level of simplicity it might exist at, so that not only are we burying ourselves with the weight of our own cultures and history, which he speaks of throughout this in terms of religions and anathemas, but also by using that thick language, he creates a real sense of how difficult it is for us to really create any positive change in the face of all of this. So when we get to the world of infertile, polluted, and aphotic terra firma of despair, it's clear that it's at our own hands. Beautifully done. I mean, it's
rare that I've seen somebody use five-syllable words with a way that actually enhances the meaning rather than burying one in a dictionary. So really brilliantly done.
Hi. Thank you, Thomas. I agree with you guys. Got to add in like iRobot, Soylent Green, and if you think about it, got to go with Carnival Number 9 from Emerson, Lake and Palmer, that whole three-part series with that one song walks right along inside the piece itself. And that number 5 kind of hits at the angle at where he's going. I have survived eons of posteriori wars, ice ages, and calamities, a mutual evolution of Earth with anthropomorphic barbarities, apocryphal and apocalyptic postulates of man's sedulous anarchy, from androids, humanoids, and now androids of a new hierarchy. So yes, it does walk into that, the automaton of the stages being now that computer that owns and runs everything as it sees fit, as it only sees one thing, that of us as a virus. And that note in the back end, it's on the idea of what gets eroded over time, the real meaning behind the voice that sits within that chair. And all we're really left with is that note to Ozymandias, the destruction of that which was, and not knowing the full history behind what was left, and that is the destruction. So, nicely done, Frank. All right, Gene, we're coming back to you.
The next piece I'm going to put is called The Nobodies by Dashpat One. And I have an audio for this one. So here we go. Well, almost. I have to get to the button. You know how that is.
The Nobodies by Kimberly McNeil. None of the nobodies had fireplaces because none of them had chimneys. Not one fragrant curl of smoke escaped. Their dusty gray lawns appeared abandoned. No grass to lay in, or yard to play in. Sick, mature trees provided little shade. Green-thumbed nobodies landscaped with shiny squares of astroturf. Outlined with plastic dirt and one-sized river rocks. Clumps of fake flowers, unnaturally stiff and bright. Bloomed all year long throughout the trailer park. But inside their tiny house, it was warm and inviting. Licorice scented candlelight illuminated colorful figurines that dotted all four walls. Their porcelain tchotchke collection they displayed for themselves. End poem.
Great read, Dashpat. Thank you for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam, let's start with you.
All right. Well, I had read this one earlier, and I like the title. I feel like it could be like the title of a movie, when I read this one, I was really, it really touched me on how she speaks on the beautiful people found within a home, but specifically how society judges you by the home that you live in. You know, looking at the trailer parks and the idea of the trailer trash, and says, you know, what you see, the judgment you make is not the people that I see. And she really brings in all the senses. Licorice scented candlelight illuminated colorful figurines that dot all four walls, their porcelain chook collection they displayed for themselves. And I think the other part that impresses me with this is how she brings in the decorations, the figurines, the fake flowers, even the astroturf, to me speaks on the idea of a people who are trying to bring some sort of color and joy into their life, within their limited means. So I really felt like this was quite a poignant write and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. And Thomas, how about you?
I think this is a great sort of, in some ways almost an in-joke, because it's like saying, using AstroTurf, by the way, I just...
Thomas, you're fading out.
Yeah, pretty bad.
The fake flowers. I mean, I had a neighbor in the last house I owned who was so despaired with her garden and so desperately wanted something beautiful that she was planting fake flowers and dying of cancer at the same time. And this speaks to that sense of when you feel like you have nothing, something is better than nothing. And at the same time, I've known people in trailer parks where the exterior may be hideous, but their hearts are warm and they're good people and they're doing the best they can in a rather untenable world. And she catches a whole lot of this very strongly, right down to the tchotchkes.
Absolutely.
Nice. Thank you, Tom. Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, wow. You know, if this wasn't already picked for, I think it was, wasn't it just picked for front page?
Yes, 10 hours ago.
If it wasn't, I would have nominated it because this is awesome. You know, you have all the emotion that goes on with it. You know, when she was just with the imagery, oh my gracious, that so great imagery all throughout. You could just see the place, you know, the feel of the place, not just see it, but feel it, you know, like Pam said, she arouses all our five senses in this poem and even, you know, pulls out all her emotions. And, you know, the juxtaposition with the beginning of the part and then those last lines where the warmth and the inviting and, you know, the licorice scented candlelights and, you know, the what they're doing to give a little bit of a joy to themselves compared to that cold and uninviting exterior is just just punches you, you know, that's just wow, you know, that it makes the ride all that more powerful, that ending compared to the beginning. Wow, just wonderfully done, you know, Dash Pack. This is an amazing, amazing ride.
Nice, Naomi. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought this was a great ride. I have to agree with Naomi all the way around. She said she dedicated this to her friends who live in a trailer park. But people are so quick to pass judgment. I put in my comment to her, we should never judge any book by its cover. You know, people do the best they can with what they have. And, you know, if they're living in a trailer park, so be it. They're living in a trailer park. They're keeping a roof over their heads. They're blessed enough to have that. You know, it might not be the way you want your outside to look, but that's why they make vanilla and chocolate ice cream. You know, not everybody can afford something so wonderful and lavish, you know, what have you. The way it is the way it is. If they can make ends meet and make it livable and keep them happy, you know, to that extent, so be it. You know, the fake flowers, you know, if it brings a little bit of sunshine into somebody's life when they look out their window, you know, even if they just look out and they chuckle and say, look at them silly plastic flowers. Because we all have done things like that in our lives, I believe. You know, we do something and we go, look what, look how silly that is. But we did it, you know, and it makes us laugh. You know, it gives us a smile. But I think she really captured it right here in these last 7 lines. But inside their tiny house, it was warm and inviting. Licorice-scented candlelight illuminated colorful figurines that dotted all 4 walls. Their porcelain tchotchke collection, they displayed for themselves. You know, the thing is, it's all about the love that's inside that home. You know, no matter the landscape, love and joy can be so abundant within the walls. This was a wonderful and insightful piece. Excellent work. That's really what I had to say about it. I think it was a great job. So nice job, Dash Pat, and thanks for sharing with us tonight. Great piece.
Nice. I think Nobody's was a perfect name for this because it has offered up that notion of looking down your nose at others because of where they live. The funny part is a lot of these places were built as a retirement communities out in the middle of nowhere, so to speak, where they had plenty of sunshine, air, open fields, and relaxation. Yet the rest of the place grew around them, and now they're the old, ancient, dilapidates that everybody hates to look at. But hell, that's where it all started.
Yep.
And you're right, the back end of this, hey, if you look at that picture, you can see the ground doesn't drain very well. So the plastic flowers makes sense because nothing else lives.
Yep.
And the fact of having astroturf means at least you get to walk on steady ground instead of mud in the moment.
Yep.
So, but the back end is what hits it, the idea of what's inside as opposed to what's outside. So nicely done, Dash Pat. Thank you very much.
Amen. Okay, Pam, I am coming to you. This is a piece called Dereliction, Boundless Darkened Dreams by Darkened Auras. So whenever you're ready.
All right. Her life is blank like a dial tone, endless and infuriating, and her screams of terror fall on the deaf ears of her dead twin, reflecting in the mirror of despair, lost and forgotten yesterdays, trapped within a timeless void, staring now, emotionless, like a zombie without a soul. She lifts a knife into the air, and as a single tear falls, she plummets the mirror with now bloody fists, shattering the image before her and releasing her mind from entrapment. Finally, she's free. She forms a fetal position and lies weeping on the floor. Her strings now cut, no ties to bind. What will she do now? She has no voice. She's comatose. She can't move. She's paralyzed. It's like she's in a coma. No true reality exists. All she knew is gone now, and with the blade, she slits her wrist. A crimson form of pain flows now, draining her as she fades. into soundless, darkened dreams and poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Naomi, let's start with you.
Oh, my gracious. Whoa. What a dark rite this is. My gracious. You know, she forms it. You know, imagine being like in a comatose state there, you know, paralyzed, just not being able to move, being, you know, just, you know, having no more, I don't know, just being like in a robotic state there. And then the ending lines, you know, she slits her wrists. Just the word slits her wrists. You know, very powerful, very dark. You know, it's deep, deep desperation you feel in here. Somebody that's really in hell, I guess, and, you know, and can't escape it. So, wonderful, wonderful, Dark Rite by Dark Andoris. Wow, the imagery in here is just crazy dark and creepy and, so wonderfully well written. Bravo.
Nice. Thank you, Naomi. Thomas, how about you?
He dropped.
Oh, okay. All right, Jean. Ha-ha. On to you.
Well, there we go. You know, I thought this was so full of, so dark and full of despair. It's a really intense piece when you get into the second half of it. And I think that it was well written by, you know, yeah, I'm okay. I'm a little distracted. Can't help myself. I just think that it was just a well-written piece, but really, wow. I mean, it is pretty painful. You know, just to even read it, it brings that sense of pain and despair to the reader in a very well-done way. So thank you so much, Dark Andoris. I mean, great piece, and thank you for sharing.
Nice. Thank you, Jean. And Pam, you read it. What you think?
Yes. And it was a great poem to read, certainly very dark. You know, it was a brilliant dark tale on a woman desperate to escape from her personal hell. You know, you could feel the depression and the anger within it. And like when she says, she plummets the mirror with now bloody fist, shattering the image before her. You see the idea of a woman who hates herself so much, who hates how trapped she feels, not only in probably her situation, but within her own mind. I like how Darkened Aura writes on the emotional and mental breakdown of the woman before at the end going into the physical act of taking her own life, which, you know, is extremely sad, but I think it works very well and is poignant for this particular rite to show the idea of a woman who has lost any sense of hope with her own life. So very well done.
Thank you, Pam. All right, Jean, we're coming to you.
Okay. I have to remember what for. No, I'm only kidding. Oh, my God. I'm like, okay, well, am I supposed to comment? No, I already commented. I have to go through the little most brain. Okay, Rex, this brings me to you, and this is called Energy by Daniel Giacchino. So whenever you're ready.
Energy by Daniel Giacchino. There are times when I am locked of the flesh, explode as a chemistry experiment. Energy stealing energy and the energy exchange of energy's touch. But an individual is not the house they live in, as easy as it is to hide under the covers. I fight agoraphobia when the walls around me heat my skin. When I go out in the sun, I fantasize interstellar travel. Thoughts, a collection of random rambles by a machine, pain and pleasure, alarm bells from a clock that is the life I move through. I'm not sure what I am, but I can't grasp it, and it's not the flesh and bone that I try to grasp with. And boom. All right, Pam.
All right. Well, I have to say, first of all, Rex, that was a really good read there. And as always, it's a wonderful philosophical and intelligent write by Daniel. I like how he speaks on the idea that we are all, everything, including ourselves, is made of this energy. And some energy is just too much to take. It's either too negative or it's too high. And I really like, but an individual is not the house they live in as easy as it is to hide under the covers. I fight agoraphobia when the walls around me heat my skin. When I go out in the sun, I fantasize interstellar travel. I like how you bring in the idea of, you know, the fear of open spaces. And then the questions of, but, you know, I'm not sure what I am, but I can't grasp it, and it's not the flesh and bone that I tried to grasp with. I feel like this speaks on that idea of feeling so trapped within yourself and wanting to escape that, but fearing the energy of the rest of the world. So amazing right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, you know, I like this very thought-provoking, this right. You know, like, yeah, we are energy. We are atoms and molecules put together, like everything on the planet Earth is that. But what are we exactly? You know, like, you know, we're trapped inside of this ball of energy. Of course, we have minds. But what are we exactly? I think, you know, that's the question that he's asking, you know, he's trying to grasp with it, you know, beyond just the flesh and the bone. What are we? You know, maybe even the question of going spiritually, like, do we really have a soul? You know, you can go far with this, right, and your thought process. So yeah, made me really, really think this, right. So thank you so much, Daniel DeGino. Great, great right.
Thank you, Naomi. All right, Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought this was a wonderful, thought-provoking piece by Dan, and I thought he did a great job with it. His thoughts throughout were wonderful. I kind of picked it up here, Thoughts, a Collection of Random Rambles by a Machine. Pain and pleasure, alarm bells from a clock that is the life I move through. I'm not sure what I am, but I can't grasp it. And it is not the flesh and bone that I try to grasp with. I found that his thoughts in here were great. Down in the AN, it says, we are men and women. To deny that would be to deny the truth. But also, men and women are not what we are. To deny that would be to deny the truth. So, you know, it definitely gives you food for thought, you know, to think about all the different aspects of life. You know, I think Naomi and Pam, you know, wonderful thoughts on the piece itself. So great job, Dan, and thanks for sharing.
He bites on those age-old questions. Who are we? Where do we come from? Why are we here? Why do we die? Those questions one grasps for, but one can never hold them, because materially it's all a matter of what boils down to one. And he gets on this idea of the energy. He's right. We are energy, and we're a huge array of molecules streamed together, running with electrical outlets all the way through our bodies from head to toe. The mind controlling is that computer. Collection of Random Rambles by a Machine. A brain. Pain and pleasure, alarm bells from a clock that is the life I move through.
that kind of hits on the idea of age itself and trying to figure out those questions at the back end of life, I guess. But the simple angle is, I fight agoraphobia when the walls around me heat my skin. When I go out in the sun, I fantasize interstellar travel. So the idea of energy doesn't dissipate, doesn't get destroyed. It keeps moving throughout. And he wants that journey to continue, as not the physicality, but in the chemicality of us moving forward. Because most of who and what we are inside, there is so much space between the protons, the neutrons, and all of that, that you wouldn't believe it. Nicely done, Daniel.
Nice.
All right, nice. We're all back on.
Okie doke. Well, let me get this next piece from Miss Naomi to read. And this piece is by Jessica C. Wheeler, and it's called Rock and Fall. Hey, Robbie. What's coming? Okay, Naomi, whenever you're ready, hon.
Yes, off mute. Okay, Jessica C. Wheeler. That's it, eh? Jessica C. Wheeler? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, rock and fall. You quickly tumble down the hill and shed your coatings of green moss, a question in your tone and boast, declaring you're a rolling stone. How vacant is your fleeting thrill? Wide open spaces echo loss. Your days are dark and full of ghosts. Through walls, you're flying on your own. With every bump and hit, you crack. The pieces fall behind and scatter. With nobody to hold or block, momentum builds beyond control. This path is but a one-way track for falling stones that come to chatter. They break away to fall from rock, all they ever do is roll. End poem.
Thank you, Naomi. And Jean, let's start with you.
I knew it because I was reading it. I was gathering a poem and I wasn't with Naomi when she was reading it. So I'm going to throw Pam under the bus. Pam, could you comment first, please? And I'll be right there, right behind you.
I will try, but I might be able to sound a little muffled underneath this bus.
We can lift it off. Here we go. Okay, I tossed it to the
bus. Yeah, let's have to use his super strength to pick it up. But as always,
it isn't moving.
As always, I am very impressed by Jessica's writing. I love that she takes the whole Papa was a Rolling Stone vibe and, you know, instead of, you know, showing the idea of someone who lives this free spirit life, you know, says, you know, listen, you know, you might have some fun for a while, but, you know, as she says, how vacant is your fleeting thrill? Wide open spaces echo lost. Your days are dark and full of ghosts. Through walls, you're flying on your own. With every bump and hit you crack, the pieces fall behind and scatter with nobody to hold or block. Momentum builds beyond control. And I really like how she uses the phrase momentum builds beyond control. And like, yeah, you could be that Rolling Stone gathering no moss. You know, you could be that free spirit that acts like they don't need anybody, but eventually your rock and roll lifestyle, your high pressure lifestyle, it is going to catch up with you, and you are going to lose control of your life, and you're going to find yourself just basically crushing those who tried to be a part of your life. I think the whole extended metaphor of this was just brilliant, and it was very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. All right, Jean, you ready now?
I'm as ready as I'm going to be. I thought this was a great write by Jessica. and I thought it was well penned, and I liked her thoughts throughout. And Pam, I think you pretty much nailed it, and I'm so glad you went first because I felt better. But I picked up these last two stanzas. Again, here I am at the end. With every bump and hit you crack, the pieces fall behind and scatter. With nobody to hold or block, momentum builds beyond control. The path is but a one-way track for falling stones that come to shatter. They break away and fall from rock, yet all they ever do is roll. So, yeah, you can be as freewheeling as you want, but in the end, you know, something's lost by that. You know, there's nothing really to hold on to, I think, is where she's going with this. And, you know, congratulations on the gold win for this. I thought it was pretty, I think you really hit it because it was big prize for deep imagination and metaphors, free theme. So I think she really hit on something with that. And it was well done. So great job. And thanks for sharing.
All right. Thank you, Jean. Naomi, mm-hmm. How about you?
Yeah. An awesome metaphor, you know, for like both everybody said before me, like in their comments, you know, of just life rolling and rolling and taking up speed and you know, going down those tracks at 1,000 miles an hour and just derailing at some point and, you know, you know, maybe going head fast into another train or whatever, you know, that's like another metaphor there. But, yeah, just, you know, the great metaphor, the rock, you know, the stone rolling, like, you know, your life is wild and crazy and you're partying and everything. And then, you know, you don't know where to stop. You don't build those either those relationships along the way, or you don't have anything like Phil said. You don't have anything to stumble back on. You don't have anything to hold yourself to. So you just roll on till you crash. So wonderful metaphor and well deserved. Award for sure for a wonderful metaphor. Great writing, Jessica.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you, Naomi. For me, it's the ease and the fall once one gives into that note of self-destruction. You could even walk this into the idea of addiction as well. Once you get tied up, you keep rolling down that rabbit hole again and again and again and again. Until finally there is nothing left to pick up in pieces, so to speak, because you drop a good portion of those off along the way in the damage done, not to yourself, but to everybody else around you. So nicely done, Jessica. Thank you. All right, Jean.
Okay. Well, let me see now. Where am I? I think I know where I'm at. I think
way
it's my room.
Down upon the Swanee River.
Yeah, probably. Pam, I'm going to ask you to read this next piece. It's called A Permanent Smile Dressed in White Lace. Hey, and it's by Pam Wright. You know her? I know her.
Well, I hear she's a troublemaker, but yes, I'll go ahead and read.
Sometimes. I heard she was hit by a bus. Be nice.
Yeah,
to
a permanent smile dressed in white lace. I'm not meant for inner peace, and neither, my love, are you. You cannot forsake my feeling. You cannot say we're through. We've walked too many paths together. Look back. Do you see it? There's blood in the snow where the rabbit ran from the wolves. She looked so beautiful, white silk, virgin lace, a permanent smile on her face. I let you have your plaything. I let you play your game. I let you hold the leather straps that gave your kitten shame. But I drew the line when you declared I love her. She knows nothing of what it means to love you, my muse. She knows nothing of what it means to embrace your demons. Look backwards through time, my love. Look to where our insanity had risen upon a ludicrous cross you hung, and I, in fervent worship, of your wounded ribs. There's blood in the snow where the rabbit ran from the wolves. Oh, don't you desire the deep bite, the copper aftertaste of crimson lips? Bruises bloomed upon a flower bed of parchment. Her tears shine bright like a crystal chandelier. She declared she would die for you, but at the tip of the knife she begged for her life. Look back, look back. We played the victims, we played the fools, we became the butcher with the tools and learned the language of revenge. No more meek, no more mild, we're raging, deranged, panting and wild. One more time, my dear, look back. See us standing in the cold, faded bloodlust, wicked eyes, scratches on our back and thighs. There is blood in the snow where the rabbit ran from the wolves. End poem.
Great reading. Thank you very much. All right, Jean.
I have to say I absolutely love the way at the end of this poem, she says, end poem, as if, like, you know, it was just something nonchalant. You know, that's one thing about Pam. She can switch gears quickly. This is a great piece, Pam. Now, I'm trying to, like, wow, let me see now. The Songs of Avatar. Okay. I think that this was fabulous. I mean, you really painted quite a series of images. I like your repeat line of there's blood in the snow where the rabbit ran from the wolves. She looks so beautiful, white silk, virgin lace, a permanent smile on her face. I let you have your plaything. I let you play your games. I let you hold the leather straps that gave your kitten shame. But I drew the line and declared, I love her. You know, she knows nothing of what it means to love you, my muse. She knows nothing of what it means to embrace your demons. Fabulous piece, Pam. Really, honest to God. I mean, it just, and the whole thing, it just strikes you again and again and again throughout. You definitely, like, you know, your title, A Permanent Smile Dressed in White Lace. And then we have this. It was wonderful. Just a great job, really. The title and the poem were so much in contrast, but you could kind of see where they came together. So I liked it. Very well done. Very well done.
Thank you. Yeah, I did want to keep that juxtaposition with the title and the poem. And the poem or the song is called Bloody Angel by the band Avatar. And if you ever get a chance to look at the lyrics of the song, you can actually see where the darkness came from.
Gotcha, so. Gotcha. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Jean. Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, can you come back to me? I just got back from letting my cat in and getting her food, and she does that to me every time.
Rex, I think they put you on the bus. Yes.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yes. The interruption of animals and their needs. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna go. There's a serial killer couple, from what I see, and well, one falls in love with the victim. Because you do hit on that note of rabbits and wolves, them being the wolves, so to speak, because they do the hunting, but falling in love with one of the rabbits is never a good thing because the lesser of the two ends up understanding the meaning of we do this in our names, not in anybody else's. It's all about us in the moment. And in fact, you bring it down to the fact, it's all about the one and the power that's held within that note, because it is all about how they view things and how they can wrap the world around them, so to speak, in the moment, and nothing else matters.
Absolutely. I'm smiling right now, Rex, because you are just spot on. That was basically the whole storyline of, you know, what I was going for, the idea that, you know, she felt they had a bond. And, you know, as long as, you know, he could have his playthings, as long as he understood that she was his main partner in the serial killing. But, you know, obviously, like I said, the line was drawn. But very cool. Thank you.
Great job.
All right, well, at least I bring it back to you. Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, you know, the secret's out. Well, I was going for, you know, a Bonnie and Clyde kind of vibe, you know, where, you know, Clyde is cheating on Bonnie with the joke or something, you know. But I really liked this, the vibe that it gave me, the whole right, and especially, you know, the she looked so beautiful, white skin, virgin lace, a permanent smile on her face. You know, the juxtaposition with the white silk, the virgin lace, and the smile, and then the darkness that comes out throughout the right, you know, like the bruises bloomed upon a flower bed of parchment. Her tears shine bright like a bright chandelier. She declared she would die for you, but at the tip of the knife, she begged for her life. So, you know, she wasn't, you know, she said she died for you, but when she had that knife under her, she caved in awful fast. But, yeah, just the juxtaposition again with the lace, the virgin, and the bloodlust there gives it, you know, a very powerful vibe to this whole right. So bravo, Pam. Well, very well done.
Thank you, Naomi.
I just want to know if there was any biographic. I want to know if there was any biographical content in that piece, Pam.
Yeah, like this is what we do in wintertime in Wisconsin.
That's what I've heard stories about Wisconsin. Oh, my God. Okay, Rex, I'm coming to you with the next one, quote, Moondust by Ben Hart, whenever you're ready.
Moondust by Ben Hart. I skipped a penny across Tide's retreat into nightfall to buy back the daylight from dusk's peacock bluff, and it rippled in the scattered halcyon reflections like a ballet in spectre streetlights on a road into nothing. But all it did was snow moon dust. And those snowmen don't smile, those angels are flightless, cut down by cold throats, chimney and glass smoke into a smoldering, smothered trembling. Such was the shapeless bereavement beyond the North Sea shore, a writhing death into which yesterday's full moon went missing, emerging but a light reflected on a knife's edge, a fairy tale dancing on a high wire, accorded by a gilded grin, a fulcrum, coveting what it pushes away, because it isn't flying until you fall, through Mangata masquerades of warmth, on the Sunyata shadows contrasting chaos, to celebrate a waning wound becoming love. And boom.
All right, Naomi, we'll start that one with you. Naomi, you there?
Uh-oh. Yeah. Nope, Naomi dropped.
All right, then I guess it's going to be you.
But you don't. Well, you know, I think this is a wonderful piece by Ben. I was trying to figure out if I want to start at the beginning of this one. It's just, I skipped a penny across Tide's retreat into nightfall to buy back the daylight from dusk peacock bluff. And it rippled into scattered halcyon reflections like a ballet in spectre streetlights on a road into nothing. But all it did was snow moon dust. And those snowmen don't smile. Those angels are flightless, cut down by cold throats, chimney and glass smoke, into a smothered trembling. such was the shapeless bereavement beyond the North Seashore. Wonderful imagery in this, and it's got a bite to it, you know. It's got a bite to it, and I didn't want to, like, keep reading to get down to the next line I wanted to mark off. But I think it was really wonderfully written, and I think, Ben, you did a great job with this piece. It's much shorter than what I'm used to from you, but that's not a complaint. I think that this was just wonderful. So thank you so much.
Nice. Thank you, Dean. Pam, mm-hmm. How about you?
Yeah, this had amazing imagery and metaphors. I like how it speaks on this sense of longing for love, for connection. I really like, and those snowmen don't smile, those angels are flightless, cut down by cold throat, chimney and glass smoke into a smothered trembling. The idea that all of the emotions around you are becoming cold and unreachable. I also really liked a fairy tale dancing on a high wire, applauded by a gilded grin, a fulcrum coveting what it pushes away. You know, that desire for a sense of excitement and danger and pushing away what could have been. You know, an amazing write and very well done.
All right. Thank you, Pam. I got to take that opening stanza. There's something different about it. I skipped the penny across the tide's retreat in the nightfall to buy back the daylight from dusk peacock bluff, and it rippled in the scattered halcyon reflections like a ballet and specter streetlights on a road into nothing. But all it did was snow moon dust. That skipping penny kind of hit the idea of, you know, the wishing well effect, looking to offering up that touch of copper as a note to what one wishes to see. And when you get to that note, the snowmen don't smile, angels are flightless, cut down by cold throats, chimney and glass smoke, into a smothered trembling. Such was that shapeless bereavement beyond the North Seashore. The North Seashore, I mean, you're up in cold winds come wintertime, but the shapeless bereavement beyond the North Seashore. So I'm thinking distance, space between the two. And that note to the back end kind of hits at the idea of that leap of faith, so to speak. So, nicely done, Ben. All right, Jane.
Here we go. The next piece I'm going to put up is called Stunt and Gross by Olivier. So I'm going to give this one a read. And Stunt and Gross. Reminded of lessons from long ago, Grandma tells me of hidden treasure buried behind the blackberry bush is a capsule of childhood pleasure. The mystery fades as I open the tin. $2 I find snoozing within. Really snoozing, breathing and all. I fumbled the tin and they had a great fall. Out rolled the two, one green and one blue. I'm Gross, says the green one. Pleased to meet you. The blue one rolls from back to front, stands up slow with a huff and a grunt. Dust itself off and says, watch it run. Gross says, please be polite, stunt. On each of their heads, a flower in bloom, with Gross standing tall, stunts wilting with gloom. Their bright violet eyes were shaped like the moon. I wonder if that's where they came from. Would you like one? Gross says to me with love, as he plucks a berry from the bush above. With groans and growls, Stunt protests, the first berry's mine. No, it's our guest's. I smile at Stunt with his sullen grin, pick a big berry and hand it to him. Be my guest, I invite. Stunt's flower begins to glow in the light. With full berry bellies, it's time to go in. Stunt and Gross climb back into the tin. I hear Stunt shout, don't drop us again. I carefully race home with my new friends therein. End poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, bring it on.
Yeah, this is an absolutely delightful write. It's one of those that is really for all ages. Like, you can enjoy it as an adult. You can read it to your children. It's clever. It's fun. I love how it speaks on, you know, the love of family, but also childhood imagination. And I thought it was very interesting that he made, you know, the green one growth because usually, you know, like the green berries are the smaller ones. So, but it made me think of the idea that the green one represented the opportunity to grow and the blue one was stunt, you know, and I thought the opposite. Well, maybe it reached the point where there was no longer that willingness to grow. And but I don't know if they meant to have any like deep metaphor in their choices, but I did get that from it. And you know, but it was just all around enjoyable. The idea of a young boy or a young child picking berries and coming across these mystical creatures to be their friend. You know, I definitely would read, if this became like was a series or something. Oh, it is. Yep. Stunt and Growth series, number one. Well, you know what? I look forward to reading number two. So, yeah, and three and four. So, great writing and yes. Very well done.
Thank you, Pam. All right, Jean, you got to read it.
Oh, I thought this was just an awesome little write. I loved the rhyme and the meter, and I thought it was so much fun. A very endearing piece, and I thought it was well done. And I'm so pleased you shared it with us tonight. Olivier is fairly new to the group. I think it's maybe been at least about a week most. But I think it's just a fun piece, and it's got a lot of, I don't know, it brought a smile to my face when I was reading it. The image, she says it's an AI-generated image, and I think the image so well suits this this poem. So whoever, however, you know, I think it was just greatly done. And I do. I hope that he'll get part two, part three, part four, you know, and I hope you keep sending them our way. I really enjoyed it. It was it's kind of just a breath of fresh air, you know. I mean, it was something lighthearted and easy. So wonderful job, Olivier, and thank you so much for sharing with us.
Nice. Actually, you could pop this up as a kiddie book.
Yes.
Probably do well. So I like that one. But this also comes with a note, a model too. Because you look at that first stanza. Reminded of lessons from long ago, Grandma tells me of hidden treasure. Buried behind the blackberry bush is a capsule of childhood pleasure. Two notes right there. You've got the capsule. And long ago, a little treasure, something forgotten. So you're looking at later in life, 50, 60 years old, go back and dig up what that treasure was. And you go back in time. All those little tidbits that you once knew are reconnected once more. And you get that Twilight Zone feeling at the back end of kicking the can around all those years ago. Now you get to do it a second time, vividly.
Good stuff.
Back to you, Jean.
Oh, I don't know. I'm still right. Okay, let me see now. This will take me back to Pam. So, I'll do Pam, and then I'm going to put up Titus's piece. Okay, here we go. Now I got to find Pam. Where are you, Pam? Marco?
Polo.
All right, there you are. Okay, I got it. This is called Rose Colored Glasses by Casey Day. Whenever you're ready. Oh, God.
The stars in your eyes were collapsing, but you were the rose in my rose colored glasses. So we made a toast and let love explode, preying on each little piece. It'd find its peace in a world growing old. Were we getting old? Are we getting old? I didn't put the bones in the ground, but here we are now. End poem.
Good, right there. Thank you very much. I'm surprised you didn't say this to yourself, Jean.
Well, you know, I was trying to kind of stay in line with the way they were falling. Without getting too far out of line. So I wasn't trying to be that way. This is a great little piece. Casey has a great way with brevities, always. She always says so much with so little, and I always appreciate that. But the stars in your eyes were collapsing, but you were the rose in my rose-colored glasses. So we made a toast and let love explode, praying on each little piece it had find its peace. In a world growing cold, we were getting old. Are we getting old? It's a neat, it's just really nicely expressed. You know, I love the first two lines, I guess, best of all. I could go say, well, I like the first four lines best of all. But I like the stars in your eyes were collapsing, but you were the rose in my rose-colored glasses. I thought that was just a nice way of I don't know, saying it, I guess. I don't know. It, because rose-colored glasses is usually, you know, a sense of, you know, you believe something that's really not there. And I think that, but it's she said it so well in this. So nicely done, Casey, and I appreciate the share. Nice job.
Thank you, Jean. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, this is an amazing brevity with great imagery and metaphors. I like the metaphor at the end with the idea of love that has been killed and buried. The questions asked, were we getting old? Are we getting old? You know, the thought that those things that we once found to be part of youthful energy, like the, I don't know, like almost like the idea of the what it's like at the beginning of a relationship to what it's like at the end, near the end of a relationship. And amazing right and very well done.
Nice. Actually, I can see it rolling that way. And also the definition of long term. I mean, the stars in your eyes were collapsing, but you were the rose in my rose-colored glasses, meaning the that part of her dying that gave her the outlook on life as being something more than what it really is. So we made a toast and let love explode, praying on each little piece it find its peace, the world itself. In a world growing cold, were we getting old? Are we getting old? Didn't notice the passage of time as it rolled on because of those rose-colored glasses. Now she's asking the question, are we getting old? I didn't put the bones in the ground, but here we are now. Funeral. Or attending graveside service, one or the other. So, I like it.
Okay.
Thank you, Casey. All right, Jean.
Okay, Rex, it's going to bring me to you because I'm going to do Jody Melton's piece first. And I have to find out what it's called. Truce Left in REM by Jody Melton. So whenever you're ready.
Oh, I get this? Okay. Truce Left in REM by Jody Melton. In the realm of sleep, neath the moon's soft sway, a dream, a truth in mystic array, did bloom unbidden in the depths of night. Its hues more vivid than the day's pure light. In dreams I walked a path untrod by feet, where secrets whispered, tales bittersweet. Each step a revelation, truth unveiled in this strange reality where logic failed. The stars, they danced in patterns all so clear, their cosmic song so distant yet so near. In every twinkle, knowledge deep and vast, a glimpse of truth from ages long since past. This world of dreams, a canvas wide and bright, painted with wisdom colors, bold and right. Each scene a story, each shade a thought, a tapestry of truth so keenly sought. But as the dawn approached with rosy fingers, the dream began to fade, yet memory lingers. I reached for truth as it slipped like sand through the desperate clasp of my waking hand. The day breaks light, a curtain drawn so tight, erasing visions of the fleeting night. I long to hold that dream, to keep it near, to grasp the truth that seemed so very clear. Yet in the light, that truth so bright in sleep, turned shadowed, distant, buried deep. A puzzle missing, pieces, a song unsung, a tale half told, a bell unrung. So now I wander in the light of day, seeking a truth that night took away. In every corner, neath every stone, for the dream's wisdom, once mine, now unknown. but dreams are fickle, and truth more so, in a dance of shadows to and fro. I wonder, will that dream again unfold? Will the night reveal the truth untold? And poem. All right, Jean, you can have that one.
I love this one. I really did. I love the rhyme and the meter in it, because we all know I love rhyming poems. That's just me. I love that truth left in REM. You know, I wanted to grab some of these first ones. You know, in dreams I walked a path untrod by feet where secrets, whispered tales bittersweet, in each step a revelation. Truth unveiled a strange reality where logic failed. But then, you know, they were all such great starting stanzas, you know, all the way down. But I have to say, when I get down there, it's like, yet in the light that truth so bright and sleep turned shadows, blips up. Distant, buried deep, a puzzle missing. Pieces, a song unsung, a half-told, a bell unrung. You know, I think those last three stanzas really, you know, nodded to the title, and I think that they were really great. I mean, you know, but dreams are fickle and truths more so, in the dance of shadows to and fro. I wonder, will that dream again unfold? Will the night reveal the truths untold? I don't know. I just think it was wonderful, you know, how he goes through the emotions of the dreams themselves. And then, you know, as the dawn comes, you know, things change. And I thought it was a great progression of the piece, and nicely done. I don't think he missed anything. So just a wonderful, wonderful share. So thank you, Jody, for sharing with us tonight.
Nice, Jean. And Dan, how about you?
Oh, this has great rhyme and flow, wonderful imagery. I really like how it does speak on the idea of seeking answers, seeking a truth within yourself, and how when seeking that truth within the realms of dreams, they can be, sometimes they can reveal more than our waking mind does, and other times the truth revealed in dreams has a very fickle nature. I really like when he says in the second stanza, in dreams I walked a path and trod by feet where secrets whispered tales bittersweet, each step a revelation, truth unveiled in this strange reality where logic failed. You know, sometimes we have to depend more on a kind of a, you know, like that gut feeling, that gut feeling that comes through. So amazing right and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. I like the set and the flow on this because it's done in short lines. And if you miss out on the initial beat rolling, it will, the flow rolling in, you read a little off kilter. So you got to hit that note of like the in the realm of sleep beneath the moon's soft sway, a dream of truth in mystic array did bloom unbidden in the depths of night. Its hues more vivid than the day's pure light. And he rolled on that note. I hagged it on opening up, but then it got a lot easier as I remembered Jody's patterns of dropping in that note to rhyming. And it plays out well, rolling through the edge of dreams and how the mind is the sleeping body of us and the waking subconscious opening up to the thoughts of dreams that roll through the day's events, trying to figure out that note. And there was just something about one that you had at the tips of your fingers or the tip of your tongue, but now it eludes you in the moment and you hope to get back to that angle, but it never really walks that way.
Mm-hmm.
Nicely done, Jody. Thank you.
Absolutely. Night, Robbie. Have a great night. Okay. Next piece I'm going to put up is by Titus Llewellyn, and it's called Her Warmth, A Never-Ending Autumn. So I also have an audio for that one.
Her warmth, a never-ending autumn. I am reminded during what was the first fall, her holding up autumn somewhat smiling, while the first few leaves the maple sprawl amply soft, bearing the psalms ye compiling the dew on, whose leaf does not wither. Whatever theirs who prospers, 'tis a sign. Confined to warmth, she will come hither. Raised charms through daisy chains simply shine, soft as chiffon she, a peaceful changeover merely linen to the touch, enough to enshrine in keeping upright and standing, moreover larger than life. Like the sunflower beholds fondly a benevolence, for whom saffron spice so named, her precious quality duly unfolds bisque parchment. This, my taking her advice, glimpses of what is written, the fern-like quill voices the maple syrup, soothing a listening ear, honeydew which wraps around a conscious will, written from the heart, it will often commandeer a message so welcoming, the woman of stature, giving so much of herself for the good, is Katya.
Great read, Titus. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. All right. Pam, start with you.
Yes. I thought this was just absolutely beautiful. Wonderful imagery. Great language choice. I like how he writes this on behalf of what seems to be a friend who really brings joy to other people's lives, who makes that sacrifice, doesn't think about themselves, but rather what other people need. And, I like when he brings in the imagery and of larger than life, like the sunflower behold, found a benevolence for whom saffron spice and named her precious quality duly unfolds. And those are wonderful lines because, you know, when you think of a sunflower, you do think of someone who stands tall and bright, and the saffron being such a rare and expensive spice, you can see where he brings across the quality of this woman's not only outer but inner spirit as well. So very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean.
Are you sure you want me? I thought this was just a beautiful tribute to someone that he holds dear. Wonderful imagery, and I think the descriptions that he used throughout were wonderful. Just really nicely done, and I thought it was a lovely piece. It's not very long, and it's not what I would call short either. It just has all the right elements, and it's wonderful. So I'm sure she'll be delighted to see this if she hasn't already, Titus. So great job.
Nice. Thank you, Jean. There's something, well, based on the sort of the picture itself and the fact that he rolled it as Katya on the back end, giving so much of herself for the good is Katya, had me thinking of Russian going back, I don't know, 150 years. Kind of a courtly atmosphere, because he offers up the note, raised charms do daisy change, simply shine, soft as chiffon she, a peaceful changer, merely linen to the touch, enough to enshrine in keeping upright and standing, moreover, larger than life, like the sunflower beholds, fondly a benevolence, for whom saffron spice, so named, her precious quality, duly unfolds. So there's a nice old world thought and description of who she is and the effect drawn on the one offering voice to her. So very nicely done. Thank you, Titus.
Absolutely. Okay. Rex, I'm going to come back to you for this next one. This is a piece by Scott Sharp, and it's called Time Will Paint Itself. So whenever you're ready.
Time Will Paint Itself by Scott Sharp. The swells and swales of the moment push the knee-high grass outside the old house like time pushes memories. Faded white paint, the deteriorating picket fence gaps in the recollections I can, let me start that again. Faded white paint, the deteriorating picket fence gaps in the recollections I carry like the toothless grin of a child. The dusty drive hardened by years of traffic, time travel again and again. Fields farmed with weather-worn hands that met night after night for supper inside that old house, praying for rain or sun or another day. Leaves twist, spinning to the ground, dancing like we did, dedicated to what lived inside those walls. A belief that time would paint itself on a hill in the country, overlooking the valley, amongst the bees, buzzing like we did, from wildflower to wildflower. And poems. All right. There you go, Jane. What do you think?
Oh, this is a beautiful piece. wonderful imagery throughout. Excuse me. And I certainly have wonderful metaphors as well. And I liked each one of these lines. I know we did it a couple of different places, but buzzing like we did from flower to flower. And then there was something else, dancing like we did, dedicating to what lived inside those walls. I think that that added something really wonderful to those lines, or not those lines, but that stanza. Wow. Yeah, I'm okay. But the dusty drive hardened by years of traffic, time traveled again and again, fields farmed with weather-worn hands that met night after night for supper inside that old house, praying for rain or sun or another day. And then it goes into that last stanza. And I really love that last stanza very much. It's a great piece. There's something about Scott. He always hits on a note of, you know, I don't know if it's nostalgia, but he always has this element that makes it, I don't know. I don't know how to word it. I just think that it's just fabulous. So thank you, Scott, for sharing with us tonight. I've really enjoyed this piece a lot. I think there's a lot of wonderful lines and thoughts throughout. Thanks for
nice.
Sharing.
Thank you, Jean. Mm-hmm. Pam, come on in.
All right. I'll have to knock on the door. But, this is a wonderful write of going back to your childhood home. At least that's what I get from it. Beautiful and brilliant imagery. It does have a kind of a nostalgic, melancholy feel to it. The idea of looking at a childhood home with worn and down and faded paint and broken, and looking back at those roads that you have traveled throughout life. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Nice. All right. This comes back to as you said, a bit of nostalgia, yes, but this is coming home to your roots, so to speak. Maybe that last visit before death occurs, or maybe it is that moment because a death has happened, and the call to come home is that need. So it doesn't hit on that, but it does hit on like the opening stanza of the old house, the deteriorating picket fence, gaps in recollections I carry like the toothless grin of a child. So becoming a little more in tune, that note to life. Fields farmed with weather-worn hands that met night after night for supper inside that old house, praying for rain or sun or another day, it's like farmers do. God-fearing people. And then the next one, leaves twist spinning to the ground, dancing like we did, dedicated to what lived inside those walls. I believe that time would paint itself on a hill in the country, overlooking the valley amongst the bees, buzzing like we did from wildflower to wildflower. It kind of hits him with the thought of almost a passing note to what once was. I'm bearing that at this moment, so to speak, because it reminds me of giving up a eulogy.
Yeah, it's the end of a generation if he's going back to his childhood home and stuff. You know, so it is saying goodbye in a way, you know, to what once was. But I think it's just a great reflection of how things used to be. But But with that being said, sorry to interrupt. We got 10 seconds left. Part Sinner, Part Saint is not happening tonight. Aphasiana is sick. So we will be, postponing that show for next week. And great show, everybody. Thank you, Pam, for calling in. Thank you, Naomi. Thank you, Rex, for co-hosting with me, as always. Great show, great comments, wonderful poetry. And we have a couple carryovers. We have one by Jati Prasmadia, and we have Jenny the Deep. And those two will be carried over to the beginning of next week's show. So, happy December, everybody. And I hope you all have a great week ahead. Talk soon. Thank you.
Good night, Dan.
Good night.